Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's Saturday.
It is Saturday, and I think today is going to be the dry day for the most part, is what they say. And then maybe a little bit of rain tomorrow, but not like the storms we had recently. So, golly, you can't really complain at all.
That's right. And how was your storm on Wednesday night?
It was pretty brutal. I know last week we had a little bit of damage to the car. And so, but the good thing is so does everybody else. So I'm not the big weirdo driving around with dents in the truck. So,
oh my gosh. Well, and you know, I've never seen lightning so bad. Mm. Lightning was really fierce, wasn't it?
I know.
And, you know, they showed pictures over in, I think it was New Mexico.
Yeah.
That, it was a lightning storm. I'd never even seen anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be kind of scary sometimes, you know, especially when it's starting to roll in and you kind of see the if it's light enough outside, you know, if it's in the middle of the night, you can't always tell. But, you know, if it's light out, you see those ominous clouds start to roll in and you think, ooh, there's a difference in the air. And it feels like, you know, something's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, boom, you get all that lightning and, you know, in like we saw recently, all the hail to go with it. And then it's like, oh, my gosh, that could be so scary. That's the thing about springtime that always kind of makes me a little nervous.
Yes, I think a lot of people get nervous. Spring, we have so many tornadoes sighted, and all of them don't touch down, but they sure are scary when they talk about it.
Yeah.
And when you look out the window and you see, you know, the wind and the black, I think, is always what frightens me.
Mm-hmm.
It gets so dark, and you think, what is going to happen next?
Yeah. And then you see on TV, you know, you see them talking about these storms and these tornadoes and things that are going through, you know, just north of here. And then you got the ones over to, you know, even over like, you know, San Angelo and, you know, even as close as that, you know, it's like, man, you know, it's like most of the time there's a little bubble over West Texas where we don't get all that. But golly, you know, there's times you see those and you think, man, that's awfully close. It wouldn't take a whole lot to take a little shift. And all of a sudden, boom, we're right in the middle of all that. So it can be a little scary.
It can be a little scary. And, of course, in West Texas, you know, it hardly ever rains.
Yeah.
So when you have a storm, where's that water going to go,
mm-hmm.
you know? They don't have a lot of streets that are really designed for all that water.
Yeah, yeah. When we moved here like 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was, I learned very quickly to avoid like the River Wadley.
Yes, Wadley is a bad place.
That's one of them. There's several other key locations that will flood in a big hurry. The good thing, though, is that I've noticed it seems like it's so dry out here after the rain happens and there is some flooding waters. It doesn't take too much before all that just kind of evaporates and you get back to at least drivable conditions on most of the roads anyway.
Well, and of course, like you say, it's desert land out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just goes away pretty quick because there isn't anything but rock and, you know, old desert out there. It's not like other places,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I'm thankful it's Saturday morning. I'm thankful that the sun is out, and we, you know, we need that every once in a while.
Yeah. It's going to generally be a good day and a fabulous weekend. And enjoy it because it won't be too much longer before it's 125.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, we have had some days it's already been 85.
I know. Good Lord, it's been close to 100 already. We've had a couple of, we had that, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, it was like 97. We had a couple of record-breaking days right in a row. And everybody was just walking around and saying, my goodness, it is way too early in the year to be this hot. So hopefully it's not a preview of what's coming up for the summer.
Let's hope not. If it gets to 112, we're in trouble.
Our skin's going to melt right off our face.
That's right. And we'll be crying. I guarantee if it's 112.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Faye, what is your phone number?
The phone number is 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, this is all about making money. This is about making money. Most people want to go ahead and make a lot of money now. Go ahead and grow it, get wealthy, retire early, retire happy if possible. And the last thing you want to do, well, I say that because we've had people that get close to retirement sometimes. They're not ready for it. And all of a sudden, they're ready to retire unhappy. And the way to avoid that is to start the planning process, start the growing, start the investing, do the things that you need to do, do the preparation work. To go ahead and get ready, because the last thing you want to do is come, you know, within a few years or even a few months of when you want to retire, and all of a sudden look down and you realize, we don't have what I thought we had. And that is a very dangerous reality.
It's very scary. You're right. It's very scary. You get ready to retire and you go, we don't have but $300,000.
Uh-oh.
Well, at $300,000, when you say it, it sounds like a lot, but it's not. When you're fixing to have to start spending it,
yeah.
If you don't have it set up right, it's coming out of that $300,000 your daily living expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to have income, and don't be using your principal. I tell people this every day: don't get into the principal. Have enough income that you're getting just your interest only, and live on that interest.
Mm-hmm.
And you can if you've got enough of it. If you can't, you don't have it set up right.
Yeah,
and a lot of people said, Faye, I've got all my money with you. We're making money, but what do I do when I retire? I said, we're not going to change anything. We're going to leave everything like it is. We're just going to put additional cash in your account. The day you retire, you say, okay, Faye, I need this much. And we'll put like maybe $200,000 in there. And then you start living off of that and leave the rest in interest.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make it. You'll be okay. But people who haven't done anything, I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to a fellow this week, and we were talking about how the whole process works and how, and like you're talking about, you don't want to get into the principal, because if you are, at that point, you're losing money. You start hemorrhaging money, and at some point, that's going to run out. So you want to keep it coming in, you know, and still be able to live and have your expenses and travel and do all the things that you want to do. I was likening it to a bathtub. You have a bathtub that's full of water. All of a sudden, you open the drain, you start to let it out. But to compensate for that, you turn on the faucet. So there's water coming in. Meanwhile, there's water going out. That's how you basically set up your retirement. So by the time you get to retirement day, this is how it's working. You know, you've got enough to live on and do the things that you want to do comfortably while you're still making money on top of it. So you're replacing what you're spending, basically. Is that right?
That's basically right. You've got to. If you're not replacing it, what in the heck are you going to do when you get to the end of that $300,000? What do you do then for a living? What do you do to make a living?
Yeah.
By that time, you're in your 75 or 80, and you can't go back to work. Nobody wants you. They're not going to hire you.
Oh, God, no.
So you've got to do all this before retirement.
Yeah.
You've got to make sure you've got enough money, and the only way to do that is to properly invest it. And, the market went up again, but then it may go back down the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've heard all these people saying, they're so afraid of us having a really bad downturn. And everything looks rosy to me, but that's what they're saying, that we might have a terrible one. They're not saying like 08. Now they're saying like in 1967.
Oh.
Yeah, they're talking about the big one.
Oh.
And I don't know if they're right or wrong. But I'll tell you what I think. Be prepared, you know. Have your money where it is safe, or as safe as you want it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want it safe, it's okay. But if you really want it safe, and you know what you're going to make, you know, we're the place to do it.
You know, and another 1967 would be very, very scary, because people would literally have everything wiped out literally overnight. And so the thing is, as you're looking at this and you're trying to find alternatives, you've got to think to yourself, what is going to be the safest way to do this? And I hate to say the word, I hate to use words like protection and things like that, but when you invest in a life settlement, you're not in the stock market. So whatever happens on Wall Street is not going to affect your investment. The wonderful thing about a life settlement type of investment is that people are always going to have life insurance policies. They're always going to sell them. They're always going to take that money and go do what they need to do as far as stage 4 cancer treatments. But at some point, those policies are going to mature. And so you know that that's going to be there. And you know that, you know, we're talking about, you know, big companies. We're talking about, you know, A-rated companies. And so there's all these layers of, I guess, feeling of comfort when people start making the transition from Wall Street into something like this. I would assume that's the reaction you get, right?
That's right. And people, most what they usually say to me when they bring us money is, I'm older now, and I don't want to be concerned about this. I don't want the up and down of the stock market anymore. I can't take it. I had somebody tell me they've been through three of the drops in value. Three. They've been through three of these crashes. And they said, you know, at our age now, we can't afford another crash.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with them. You know, if you're 60 years old, what the heck are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, if it crashes. I mean, you can't replace all that money in time to retire.
Yeah.
That's
looking at
bad
that
thing.
Point, working until your fingers fall off.
And I've had people tell me, you know, we were going to retire, now we can't retire. So you want to know how much you're going to make, and you want to have a good amount of money. In other words, you don't want to get to the end of the trail and have $250,000, $300,000. It's not enough, folks.
Mm-mm. No.
It's going to take a lot more than that because we're living a lot longer.
Yeah.
And we're
going
to live 25, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you live that long, it's going to take a lot of money to support you.
It really is. And the last thing you want to do, and the whole goal with this, is not to get to retirement and then start, you know, sitting down with a pad and paper and saying, okay, well, we can cut out this or we can cut out that. I know we're oversimplifying the process, but, you know, you don't want to start decreasing your lifestyle just because you retire. If anything, I would imagine people want to expand and do the things that they didn't do, and all this costs money.
Everything costs money, and it's not going to change. You know, things are not going to come down, I don't think. I've never seen anything go down. In other words, when we started out, you know, gas was, what, 50 cents a gallon, you know, and then it was $2, then it was $2.60. You know, it got up to over $4 at one time.
Yeah.
And it's like everything else. Everything is expensive, and we know this.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to live, you've got to keep up with it. Inflation's going to eat up a lot of it.
Yeah.
So you've got to be prepared. You've got to say, okay, we have a two-income household. Everybody does. I don't know of maybe two or three people that the wife doesn't work. And, you know, it takes two people now. So what happens when you have neither one of those people working?
Exactly.
You have to think about that. We have two incomes, and then we'll not have two incomes. And what are we going to have to retire on? How much, you know, can we say we can actually invest and turn it around?
So what do you tell the person who says, well, you know, this is all great and all, and I understand, but this is not going to happen to me. I've got $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 in the bank right now. I'm set. What do you tell that person?
Well, I wouldn't take the risk of it. I would say, you know, let's keep going and see if we can get you about $1.5 million, $1.6 million, and then you won't have any worries.
Mm-hmm.
You ought to be able to make it on that.
Yeah. And the great thing is once people do retire and that paycheck goes away, well, now all of a sudden your income is not the same, but your outgoing bills, expenses, travel that you may want to do, all that remains the same. But you're not making the money from that steady paycheck anymore, and so this is where this type of investment comes in, because it's a more how do you like to phrase this? Not a secure, I guess more conservative type of investment. So the risk isn't there. And the way this generally works is we're talking about, and the big program is the life settlements. And this is the one that really attracts a lot of people, because the way this works is that somebody, just anybody, anywhere, all of a sudden diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. One that's a very serious thing. And people have to go through a lot of psychological stages before they get to, okay, what do we do? Well, most of the time, what people do is when they are diagnosed with stage 4, they need a vast sum of money, because it's very expensive to treat stage 4 because of the seriousness. So the first thing they do a lot of times is they sell their life insurance policy. Am I right up to this point? Have I painted the right scenario?
This is true. And another thing people don't realize if it's the breadwinner, if it's the husband that gets the cancer, lots of times the wife isn't prepared to handle it financially.
Yeah.
She doesn't know everything to do like a man, you know, would know a lot more what to do in a case of cancer than a wife would. I've had some cases lately that the wife was beside herself. You know, how do I pay for this? What do we do? My husband can't work. You know, he's got cancer. How do I take care of the bills? You know, I mean, they're just, they're half hysterical. So then they come to us and they say, we need some relief and we need it quick. So then we talk to them, you know. Now here's what we can do. We can get you the money. It'll probably be 30, 45 days. Then whatever you need to spend it on, if you need to go out of town for treatment, if you need to go to Houston, if you need to go, you know, to Duke University, wherever you need to go, this will give you the money to do it, and then you will still have enough money to live on. That's what's scary.
Yeah, yeah.
It's spending every dime they've got and then not have anything to live on during this time.
You
and not only is cancer expensive, it takes the heart out of you, you know?
It really does. It does something to your spirit that, you know, and they often say that, you know, somebody who is diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, attitude makes all the difference in the world. And so many times you get that diagnosis of stage 4 cancer, and it's just, it can just pull the wind right out of your sails. And so I guess when we're talking about these things, I don't know that we've ever really touched on this, but you brought up a good point. This is not always just about yourself or your family. This is about, you know, hey, what would happen, you know, if this scenario happens? What would happen if something happened to the breadwinner or whatever? And so there's other people that are involved. And so when it comes to retirement, it's the same thing. You've got to think of other people. It's not just, well, you know, I want to do this. It's like, well, what would your spouse want to do? Does your spouse want to travel? Does your spouse know what to do if something were to happen to you? I mean, there's all these expenses. There's travel. There's you know, day-to-day living. But then there's the occasional emergency after retirement. And when something happens and you're not ready for it, it can be literally devastating.
Well, this is exactly right. And it depends how you've got your estate set up. Like you say, if you don't have it set up where you've got all this interest income coming in and you're sick and you're in the hospital temporarily, your wife, lots of times, she doesn't know exactly what to do. She hadn't been handling things. Now, some wives handle it all, and I'll tell you that. But most of the time, the man handles the finances.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually he's got the big 401k, and she's got a smaller one. So he's the breadwinner usually. You're counting on his paycheck every month. Okay? If he can't work, and, you know, a lot of companies will pay you for a certain length of time, but that's all. You know, they're not going to pay you, you know, 6 months while you're recovering from, you know, a broken back or something.
Yeah.
You know, they'll pay you maybe a month or 60 days. But then, you know, you've got to get up and get started again. So that's why having all this set up in advance and know that you've got this income every month is so important.
Right, exactly.
And that's why I like life settlements, because it's a life insurance policy. We know we'll get paid. We know how much interest we've got coming, and it's a matter of having enough policies that we can keep rolling those over and keep your income going.
I don't, and I know the answer, and I'm just asking this to prove a point, but have you ever known of, heard of, read about a life insurance policy that never expired?
No.
They all mature at some
now,
point.
I've got some that I'm a little worried about. If you remember that we've still got those three old policies they talked us into. And you say, have you ever heard one didn't expire? I hope not. I hope that isn't true. Oh, me. But, yes, it can go on for a long time. If you make the mistake and you buy an elderly person's policy. So there's the answer.
So we know that a life insurance policy is going to mature. We know that it's going to pay out. That is a given. There is never a question of, well, if this policy matures, I can make a lot
no.
of money. Take that away. It's when it matures.
Well, remember this. Those first old policies that we got stuck with, they did not have cancer. That's why they're not dead.
Yeah.
See, everybody forgets that. We bought a pig and a poke. We don't buy a pig and a poke anymore. We know they have cancer. We know it's stage four, and we know it's going to be fairly short. Now, this week, we had a lady with breast cancer, a 36-month policy mature in 12 months.
Wow.
They made 36% in 12 months.
Oh, my goodness.
And when it popped up, I said, see there, I'm right again about those 36-month policies. People don't really believe that I've been right so many times. And I'm going to go do a study and see how many of the 36 months or 30 months ones came in early. But this lady had breast cancer, and they put it off and said, oh, she's not that ill. And I said at the time, I'm going to buy that policy because breast cancer is always a lot sooner than what these guys think. I don't know what they're thinking of.
Yeah.
But she has passed away. I did. It was a small policy, about half a million. So these people, one of them had $100,000, and they made $36,000.
Wow. In 12
now,
months.
Now, you think they're not going to be excited.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And the great thing is you are so in tune with what's going on and the landscape of the entire marketplace with this. This is incredible because we've been talking about this for a couple of months, about how the experts are putting longer expectancies on these policies, which means that because you always go about 1% a month. And so if the life expectancy is going longer, that means the profit margin goes up because there's more months. So instead of, say, 30%, now you're looking at 36%, you know. And then you're also noticing that there's still a number of these policies that come in early. Some come on in on time, some go a little bit late, but there's a number of them still come in early. So what this is doing is this is taking that profit margin and it's taking that gap and making it broader, which means more profit for investors sooner, basically. Is that right?
Well, I think so. It'll bear us out in a couple of years when all these have matured, and we'll see how it worked out. But we've bought several lately that are 30 months and 36.
Wow.
And, you know, the kinds of cancer it is, I feel like, you know, that they will come in a little early. I don't think they'll go that long. And, of course, if it was pancreatic cancer, we'd know better, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Because we know that it's usually 9 months. Even if they can do the surgery, the longest I've ever heard of one of those going is 24.
Wow.
So everybody loves pancreatic, and that's what they're always saying. Do you have a pancreatic cancer one, you know? And we have several that we've bid on that I think we're going to get that are early that look like they're 18 months, about 18, 12 months.
Hmm.
So those everybody wanted those real quick. Those last about 4 hours when I put them out.
Wow. That is,
yeah,
you feel those quickly.
I feel them so quick. In fact, we had two people last week that didn't get in on that one that was 12 months, and he was wanting in on it. But the first people we had sent the invitation to, they took it, and they were all glad to get in it. So two of my guys didn't get in, and I promised them dibs on the first one coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So to get them back in a policy that was that good.
The market's hot right now.
Well, we're getting a lot of policies, a lot more than we did last year at this time. We've got a lot of, and lots of bids out. We've been awarded, I think, 6 or 8 that we don't have the contracts in, and we're trying to get those, and we'll get those filled as quickly as possible.
Wow. And so that's really a testament to the amount of money that people can make with this type of thing. And this is really, this is a win-win type of situation for everybody, because the policyholder who needs to sell the policy, diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, they need that lump sum of money. You buy it, and they get their money, and they can go on their treatment and do the things that they need to do. So that's good news for them. Then the great news is for the investor who comes in and they see these policies, and you have them and you offer them to people to get in on. Basically, and again, I know this is over simplifying because we don't want to make this overly complicated, even though the process is pretty simple. People come in, they invest in the policy, and at that point, they're just waiting for the policy to mature.
That's right. Once they've invested, they're going to sit back and say, okay, I've got 3 policies, 5 policies, 6. And as they come due, they'll say, okay, I've got another one come due. We're waiting for these others to mature. And when they do, most of this, remember, is IRAs.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to take the money out. They don't want to spend it. What they want to do is just roll it over to get more money for their retirement.
Yeah.
So that's the whole deal.
So when people come in and they realize that, hey, all this investment, all I'm doing is just waiting for it to retire. You know, they may be coming from Wall Street where they're chasing their investments all the time. It's like they're always in this foot race, you know, checking in the middle of the night. Do I still have anything? Checking in the morning, you know, do I have anything? And wondering and worrying, you know, they're always chasing the Wall Street type of investment. Do they get to finally relax when they say, I don't have to do any of that anymore? I just put my money in, then I just wait to hear from you when it's matured.
That's right, because it's pretty simple. You can go ahead and make a living. You can go ahead with your life, and then, you know, when the time comes, we send an email and say that policy has matured, and that the money will be in your bank about 6 to 8 weeks, and that's usually the way it works. We've had that one that took longer, but usually, you know, it goes pretty fast. Now, we've had a couple of people that have died out of the country. And recently someone died in the Philippines.
Oh.
And the Philippines, we sent them the deal. You have to send it to the State Department over there. And they said, we can't find that person. Well, what happened? I don't know if it's because of a barrier in their country and ours. They put down the lady's birth date instead of the day she died.
Oh, boy.
And so we had to redo that. But other than that, you know, it just other things are pretty simple. The way this works, it's time, it's true, the same time, every way. It works the same way.
Do you find when people come over to you for the first time, is there like, because I would imagine their whole outlook, their whole behavior pattern has to change when they're not used to it, change in a good way, but do you find that people call you like after a week or a month or whatever it is and say, Faye, this is driving me crazy, I haven't heard anything, what's going on? And
they're always checking. Remember, people do check. They'll say, oh, I want to check and see how my policy's doing, you know? And I'll say, well, you know, we haven't heard anything. Usually we know when they've died within 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
We've only had one case where they did not notify us for a month. But usually it's just right away. We know they've passed away, and we notify everybody by email immediately where they'll know that person has passed away and that they are going to get paid.
Okay. And when we're talking about getting paid, we're talking about a very quick process. I mean, it's all of this is mapped out. So when the policy does mature, you know, the insurance company knows where the funds go. Once you get it, it goes to the bank. You're probably going to have to correct me on this, but it goes to the bank, and then the bank knows whose account to put it in. All this is mapped out ahead of time. So when a policy matures, nobody's scratching their head going, hey, I don't know what to do here. No, all that's mapped out so people can feel, you know, assured that everything is streamlined, everything is in order, and just, you know, kind of chill out, hang out, and wait.
That's exactly right. And once they're used to us and the way it works, they know that we'll notify them immediately, which we do. They know that we notify them as soon as the bank has the money in their account.
Yeah, virtually no worries.
Yeah, no worries. And usually it takes the bank 24 hours to get it into their account. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we tell them as soon as we know. And all the life insurance companies, you know, most of them are really, really good about paying right away. Usually within 12 days, they write the check. Because, you know, the law says, you know, you owe this claim. So they know they have to get it out right away.
Mm-hmm. So when somebody's planning for retirement and they're looking around and they're saying, wow, this is really kind of, this is interesting to me, because I know there's a number of people who have been hearing you talk about this for a very long time who haven't really actually taken that leap yet to do anything. They're still, I don't know if they're busy, they forget, they write down the phone number, set it aside, can't find it. There's a number of things that can happen.
That
but you
sounds
always
like
say,
them put the phone number aside and can't find it. I believe that part.
I know I do that all the time. So, you know, you always talk about how people procrastinate. And so for whatever the reason is, the thing to know is that you can get started with something like this at any time. So if somebody's been procrastinating for 3 weeks, that's fine. If somebody's been procrastinating for 3 years, that's still fine. When is it too late to get started with something like this? If they procrastinated
too
long.
When you've already retired and you've already spent half of that money that you had, it's probably too late. You know, just forget this deal. You're doomed. I can't help you. You know?
So you don't have a magic money tree that people can plant when they've spent it all.
No. And, you know, I've told you that story. We've had people come to us. They're down to nothing.
Yeah.
And they love the idea of making all this money, and they're out of money. They go and mortgage their house, do a refinance, come to me and say, you know, we've got $150,000 we want to put with it. I go, not with me, you're not going to.
No.
You're going to need every bit of that just to make it, and it isn't enough.
Yeah. People don't always realize how much it actually takes. And I think we get into these situations where, you know, we paint these pictures of, my goodness, you're going to need money for, you know, to live on. You're going to need money to, you know, for one, make sure everything's paid off, the house, the credit cards, the vehicles, the boat, the lake house, whatever. Make sure there's no debt when you get to retirement. That's the first thing. But then we tell people, okay, you've got to live. You've got to travel. All these expenses start to add up really, really quick. And then on top of that, there's the potential for emergencies. So people start getting into these holes and they start thinking, oh my goodness, this is just overwhelming. And all of a sudden, they feel like they're climbing Mount Everest. They're staring up at the top from the very foot of the mountain, and it's intimidating. They say, there's no way I can have enough money to do this. So what would you say is that magic number for most people to be at when they retire? Where does somebody want to be?
Well, are you talking about how much money they should have when they get ready to retire?
Yes.
Are you talking about where they want to be? What they should be is they should say, okay, I've got enough money right now for 15 to 20 years. Okay. Maybe not 25, but let's say they've got enough for at least 15, maybe 20. And with the interest on that money, they ought to be able to make it. So they've got to add up and say, okay, I'm going to need $100,000 a year.
All right.
Okay, that's pretty easy to add up.
So for the person driving around in their truck right now, they're kind of doing some rough math. They don't have a calculator and a pad and paper and everything. They're just doing a little bit of rough math right now in their head, and they're thinking, okay, I've got $300,000 in the bank right now. I want to retire in 10 years. Is
okay,
something
they
like
need to
that
get it
doable?
Right away and get started.
Okay, so get on it. Don't delay a whole lot longer. You need to get started, but it's still doable.
Oh, it's very doable. If you've got $300,000 in 10 years, it ought to have doubled 1.5 times.
Okay, so that'll take people, you know, close to a million.
That's right.
All right.
About $750,000. So, you know, they can make it, because if they've got that much, the interest on it will carry them through.
Huh.
If they're not taking too much out. But, you know, if you start taking $150,000 out, it's not going to last any time. But if you say, okay, we're going to be conservative, we're going to take $60,000 a year to start with, mm-hmm. and let's see how it works. And then if we can take more, we will. Or we'd start out with $70,000 a year.
Yeah.
If you've got less than $1 million.
Yeah. So
if you've got $1.5 million, you know, you can take $80,000, $90,000 a year out, and with your interest, you'll be fine.
Okay. All right. So all this is attainable. People can definitely get into their goals. They just need to go ahead and get started. So, Faye, what is your phone number where people can call you and come see you next week?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330, and we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and every Saturday morning around this time, we always get into trivia, and you bring interesting, fun things to the table, whether it's some Texas history or about a person or a place to visit, maybe someplace to go on vacation or whatever the case may be. So what's the topic this morning?
Today, it's about an inventor.
Ooh.
His name is Donald Wetzel.
Wetzel.
Wetzel. He was born in New Orleans. He graduated from Jesuit High School. He got a B.S. in foreign trade. Now, this is pretty interesting. From Loyola University. He was also a professional minor league baseball player for the New York Giants for their farm system.
Oh, wow.
Now, here he graduated. He did not get an engineering degree because it was going to take 3 months longer. That's why he got the degree in foreign trade. And
he
said, well, it was 3 months quicker, and I just wanted to get the degree and get out of there. And then the president of the college said, look, I know some people at IBM. They're hiring. It'd be a great fit for you. I want to recommend you, and I'll help you get a job. Well, he went to work for IBM, and he went to work as a branch manager. Didn't start exactly at the bottom, and he began as a consultant to the banking industry. And he was in Fort Worth for a while, and they said, we're going to send you to San Antonio. Well, he didn't want to particularly go, and they wanted him to do sales, and he, you know, he didn't think he could do sales, and he didn't think that was going to work. Well, he got to San Antonio, and he loved the job. He was working with insurance companies. He was working with banks. And back then, this is before computers, and all these banks did not have account numbers with your name. I didn't know that. But years ago, banks did not think it was proper to put a number on there. Really? They said it's not personal if you have a number on everybody's account.
Oh, my.
And he goes to these banks, and he's talking to them. He said, we can update your systems. We can get it where the accounts move faster when you're writing checks, when you're processing their checks. They said, but that just wouldn't be right to have everybody an account number. That's just terrible. So he was having a terrible struggle convincing banks, you know, that this is the way to do it. And then when computers came out, one of the bankers, president of a bank, called him, said, well, one of my friends has got one of these computers in the bank, and they say it's just taking over. We want one of those, and we'll just pay you cash, whatever it costs. And this is how these banks in Texas started out with computers.
Really?
Yeah. And so he was helping the banks. He was helping the insurance companies. That was really his forte, was helping banks with different systems, getting it all done. And, you know, then they said, no, you're so good, we want to move you to Denver. He said, look, I do not want to go to Denver. I like Texas. I want to stay here. And they said, well, we're going to put you back in the field. Well, it really helped him in life because he learned so much about the banking industry, how banking really works as far as machines, mm-hmm. and how insurance companies, how they keep up with accounts, and how do they process your money. And later on, when he was with them, they said, well, we're shipping you to the home office. He said, no, I'm not going. So he quit and went to work for DocuTel in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he was really interested in how banking could be improved. So he was standing in line at the bank, his own bank, to cash a check. It was taking forever. And he started thinking right then, this can be changed. I'm going to see if I can't do it. He is the one that developed the ATM machine.
Really?
He is the one that thought it up, did it. He holds the patent on the ATM machines in the United States.
Wow.
And it's because he's so smart and doesn't even have an engineering degree. This is what's funny. And when he developed it, the banks at first didn't want it. They said, no, we need those people coming into the bank. We don't want them going outside the bank and getting their money. They didn't understand. But all along, he brought banks to the 21st century. There's no doubt about it. Banks were resistant on everything that would help them.
Wow.
And then, of course, as I said, he got them the ATM machines. The ATM machines today, there's like 371,000 of them.
Really?
They process 30 million transactions a day.
A day?
A day.
Holy smokes.
Yes. And the first bank that used his design was Chemical Bank in New York. And he patented it in 1973.
Huh.
Yeah, and he was so smart. He did a lot of other things, and he started three other companies, and every one of them was to help banks. One was a financial system company. One was a financial and equipment company. And then he did an electronic banking system for banks where they could process money more rapidly. A lot of these banks were so far behind and just didn't understand that. But the last one that he perfected with electronic signature verification systems for banks worldwide.
Really?
Yeah. So everything he did has really helped banks and life insurance companies. And, you know, worldwide, there's 700,000 ATMs worldwide.
Wow.
Can you imagine? ATMs also dispense movie tickets, phone cards, all kinds of things nowadays.
Oh, yeah. They've taken the ATM machine, and now they've applied it to all these different areas. And, man, I can't even imagine life without an ATM machine now. But now, have you seen the fees that these things charge? Mr. Wetzel probably did not anticipate.
He didn't anticipate the fees, no. Now, in 1995, the Smithsonian in Washington had a ceremony for him, and it was on the 30th anniversary of the ATM, and they honored him as the inventor and gave him an ATM card with the 000000001. How about that? And, you know, it's funny. They interviewed his wife, and apparently she was kind of an introvert, and she wasn't an extrovert like him, and asked her what she thought about ATM machines. She said, "I've never used one." Can you imagine? Oh, my gosh. But, oh, me. And he really wanted to be a baseball player. He didn't really want to do what he did in life and what he was so good at.
Wow.
And, you know, yes, he, when he went with the New York Yankees, they told him, they said, if you can't do it in 3 years, you might as well give up. And, of course, he did because he just wasn't good enough. But he said that's really what he wanted to do is play baseball. You know, he didn't want to be able to work at IBM,
yeah.
You know.
Well.
And, you know, all those years, everything he did, he learned more about banking and how to build systems for them, how to get them, you know, into the 21st century, and they were kicking and screaming. I mean, they didn't want to learn all this new stuff.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe when he found out they did not have an account number on people's accounts.
I know it.
Banks didn't do it. They thought it was impersonal.
Yeah.
And how were they processing your accounts with just your name on it?
I can't even fathom that. It just makes no sense to me. Of course, now there was probably a few less people around then, but you know, still, and now it's gone from this to online banking to you know, we can do all these things, you know, on our phone. We can transfer money. We can, you know, pay things.
Make
on
a deposit on your phone.
Yeah. It's crazy. It sounds like banking went along the way it was for years and years and years and years. He came along, came up with a couple of innovative ideas that not only changed banking at the time, but has really opened the door to all these things that we either enjoy or despise about banking now.
That's right. And all these things that he did led up to where we are today. And if he was not, you know, retired now, he would have been at the forefront of what we have now on the computers.
Oh.
Because he did the first computers for banks.
Yeah.
You know, and IBM was had these huge computers they would bring into a bank, if you remember, and you had to have air conditioning for it. You had to have, you know, everything in the world. You had to have a special room, had to be at the right temperature. It was just really an ordeal, and the banks just didn't know what to think when computers were first going to do their banking. You know, they didn't even know if they wanted one. There were several stories with him, and at the banks he was calling them, they didn't even want a computer.
Yeah.
Until somebody told them they'd bought one at their bank, and it actually worked.
Yeah. I can imagine probably at the time when the first computers went in, I would imagine that was probably quite intimidating because they're used to doing the things they normally do. Now, all of a sudden, you have to set up these special rooms, like you say, with the air conditioning. There's all these wires. The computers were huge. I mean, they were bigger than people. They were just massive cabinetry of electronic stuff, and lights are blinking everywhere. And I would imagine that probably is very intimidating to the people who hadn't seen that before.
Yes, and banks were used to just writing everything by hand.
Yeah.
You know, everything. You had ledgers. You had all this. I remember the huge ledgers in banks, because
mm-hmm.
you would see them back there working on it. And then when computers it took a different mindset to make it work.
Yeah.
And they just weren't used to anything like that. And then the other thing that he learned way before this was at IBM and all these places, they had all these time cards and all these cards for everything. And if you remember those little machines that kicked all that out, and then they cranked them, remember?
Oh, yeah.
You cranked all that, and it would spit the cards out for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And he studied all that. He knew how all that worked, and he was, you know, encouraging people to get beyond that.
Yeah. Even you take it even further as far as, you know, financial transactions go. You just take, like, using a credit card. Remember those old carbon copy things that they had to put on the little machine, and then they had that
oh, yes, thing that's exactly right.
Yeah, you swipe it left and right, and it would make a copy, and then you'd have to sign it, and then nothing got processed until, you know, either that night or, you know, a couple days later, whenever they did it. Now, then we had our cards that we, you know, put in the swiping, and then remember a few years ago when they started transferring everything over to the chip, and people were even nervous about that. We had already used credit cards for years and debit cards and all that. Then when they came out with that chip, I remember people were freaking out everywhere. They're like, "Oh my God, we can't use this! Oh, this is so hard."
Well, and a lot of places I would go, I already had the chip. And they didn't even have it yet.
Yes.
A lot of department stores didn't have it.
Yeah.
And I'd go in, I'd say, "Now, I do have the chip." "Oh, ma'am, we don't have that yet." And I was shocked. Because these are big companies. And they said it cost them so much to change their little monitors there to do the chip that a lot of them hadn't even got it done at that time.
Yes. And now, I went into a store a couple weeks ago, and I don't know if it was broken or if they just didn't have it or what, but this is like literally like 3 weeks ago, and I went to put the card in to use the chip, and they said, "Oh, no, we don't have it. You have to swipe." I'm like, "Swipe? What is this, 1950? What kind of jankety operation is this?"
Oh, my gosh, yeah. There are still a few of them that do not have it.
Yeah.
And it's shocking. Because it does protect your card if you have your chip.
Yeah.
And I would have thought everybody would have geared it up immediately, but a lot of big companies didn't do it on time, and now they're way behind everybody else.
Yeah. It's so strange how our whole attitude and our whole outlook has changed in just the last several decades. It's the advancements are just almost mind-blowing.
Well, and another thing, I don't know how most companies do it anymore, but we do ACH payments.
Mm-hmm.
We don't write checks.
Yeah.
You know, we do everything as an ACH payment, and I can see it on the screen.
Yep.
And so I know that when it goes out and who it's going to.
Yep.
And that's another thing that will prevent fraud.
Yeah.
If you do an ACH payment, you've got a record right there instant.
Oh, yeah, you can track everything.
You can track it. It's not like you write a check and somebody can get your checkbook, especially in a company, and they can write a check, and you don't might not know it for a month.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you don't write checks, it protects your accounts.
I saw somebody at the grocery store a couple weeks ago writing a check, and I'm like, "What is this line? What is taking so long with this line?" And he was standing there.
And they actually wrote a check at the grocery store.
He wrote a check at the grocery store. I thought, I haven't seen that in 15 years.
I haven't seen anybody write a check at a grocery store. I don't even know when.
I know.
Everybody uses a credit card, or they go to the bank and maybe get a little cash. But I don't know if anybody uses cash anymore.
I know. You keep hearing people say things like that for, you know, people who are out, you know, taking donations to different things, especially at the holidays. And people say, "Hey, have you got a couple dollars to donate to whatever?" And they're like, "Oh, I don't have any cash." So you hear everybody say that. Now I'm hearing the responses, "Oh, well, we have a little thing here that we can take credit cards." And they'll whip out their phone, and they got the square in there, and all you can do is swipe on their phone. And I'm like, wow.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, everything is going at breakneck speed. The world is changing daily, just very, very fast.
Man, e-commerce.
If you don't keep up, you'll get left behind.
Exactly. The advancements in e-commerce are shocking. It's like, well, you've got to keep up with this now. So this is the world we live in. But it sounds like Donald Wetzel is responsible for opening all these doors.
Yes, on banking especially. He opened doors you just won't believe. And the funny thing is he could have went to the headquarters of IBM. They wanted him up there because he was so smart. He'd learned so much. He turned them down. How many people would turn down going to the home office and becoming, you know, like a vice president or something. He said, no, I'm not interested. He said, I don't even want to do that. He said, I'll resign before I'll do that.
Wow.
And they put him on the street twice, and he just made good every time.
He just kept right on going.
Well, yeah, because they put him in charge of banks and insurance companies. Well, he knew it like the back of his hand.
Yeah.
And he'd go into those banks and show them how he could improve the bank, and the banks would sign contracts with IBM because of him.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I don't even remember back then that everybody did it that way, that you went to the banks to get their business.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. You know, you don't even do that anymore.
Oh, no, you had to walk in and talk to somebody. And you know.
Oh, yeah, they don't do that anymore.
Oh, no.
No.
Wow.
So times have changed. Banking has changed for the better.
They really have. Yeah, things have done a lot of. I know a lot of people complain about, oh, somebody will steal my information and, you know, get my card number and make all these fraudulent charges. But boy, I tell you what, compared to what it used to be, there are a lot of investments. So,
well, and the other thing is, if somebody gets your card, you know, you're not responsible for it. Remember that.
Yeah.
And they'll put the money back in your account in 3 days.
Yeah, yeah. There's. I know a lot of people were concerned about that. They still get concerned, but I think it happens so much. You know, these companies have put policies in place and have realized, oh, this is something we need to address on the front end. And so now they have these you know, like you say, it can go back in your account in 3 days. You call them up and blah, blah, blah. You go through the process, fill out a form, and then you get your money back. And so then it becomes the bank's responsibility to go after whoever, you know, may have taken your money or whatever happened there. It's no longer on the account holder's name anymore.
And they are on it every day. You do notice that. I notice it. They'll check charges now.
Yeah.
I mean, and they'll call you and say, we've got 5 charges verified.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had the last time it happened, it's been a couple of years, but the last time it did, I got a text that said, hey, you've got some suspicious activity on your card. Is this you? Call this number. And so I did, and I'm like, wow, there are charges that I didn't make. I'm not even in Costa Mesa, California. I'm in Midland, Texas. So it's not even possible. And they took care of it, and everything was fine. But yeah, I mean, golly, it just seems like Donald Wetzel has opened the door for so many different things, and it's amazing how one person's ideas can transform into all these other things, changing attitudes, changing way of life, changing how we buy things and sell things, and it's just fascinating.
Well, let me tell you, several years ago I was in El Paso, and right across from El Paso is New Mexico. Mm-hmm. I mean it's just walk across the street there. And so I gave this dinner over in New Mexico. The dinner was $1,000. And I got up ready to leave, and they said, ma'am, your card has been declined. I go, what? I mean, I said, get those people on the phone. And so we called up Visa, and I said, I'm standing here in a restaurant, and I just paid for this, and you declined it. Well, we declined it because it looked like you were in Mexico. I go, oh, my gosh. I said, ma'am, this is New Mexico, not old Mexico.
Yes, yes.
And she said, well, we thought it was old Mexico, and we knew you lived in Texas. Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
And they said nowadays you have to tell them if you're going out of the country.
That's exactly true. And, you know, another thing happened. The last time I had some things taken, it made me nervous. And so then I knew we were going to travel out of state. It was probably, I forget, it was like 1,000 miles away. And so I knew ahead of time. And so I went into the bank. And in the years that this, you know, between the last one and when we traveled last, I went in and I said, hey, look, we're gonna go traveling around to several different states. I want to make sure that charges are not declined. That's the last thing we need. Do I need to tell somebody we're going on vacation? And she said, no. Do you have the phone app for the bank? And I said, yes. They said, okay. Well, then if you travel someplace, your phone is with you. It knows where you are. So as long as your phone is with you because of the GPS tracking, we know that, you know, charges from, you know, even if it's 1,000 miles away, we know that's where your phone is, that's where you are, that's where the charge is, everything looks fine. I said, wow, I had no idea that was the case.
I didn't either, because they didn't tell me that they could track my phone.
Yeah.
Wow, now you're telling me something I didn't know. That, but they, if they had tracked my phone, they'd known it was New Mexico.
Yeah, well.
You, that, apparently back then, they weren't tracking phones.
They may not have. And, you, and there's a setting in there that you have to make sure is set, you know, so that they know where
okay.
you are. But you may want to check with them. But it was a piece of knowledge that I didn't realize that that they were doing, which is good for me and you know, other people that have cards and worry about that kind of thing. So it's worth checking into. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right here in the great city of Midland, Texas.
So we've talked about how wonderful a life settlement can be. We've talked about the money that people can make. These are real dollars. This is real securement for people's retirement. This is real money. There are three risks, though, and we should probably go over those just so that people are aware of what could happen, even though they're relatively small. People need to be aware of them.
That's right. The first and the greatest risk is it can go over. You have to be prepared. Not every policy is going to come in on time. They can come in late, and if it does, you have to pay premiums. The premiums could be $500, could be $1,000, could be like Charlotte told me the other day, hers was $11 and something for a quarter. I was bragging about a small payment, and Charlotte said, "Hey, mine was only $11. So, I couldn't brag as much as her.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that is your biggest risk, it going over, because it's going to delay your payment. You'll still get paid. You'll still get your interest. You'll still get your principal back, but it may be delayed, so you have to know that. The second one is it's not liquid during this time. When we take your money out of your account and we pay for that policy, the money has been spent. It's not liquid till the person passes away, and it goes right back in your account, and it becomes liquid again at that point.
Okay.
The third one is if a life insurance company ever went broke, it would take you longer to get paid. You'd still get your money, but it might take a little longer. But we've never had a life insurance company go broke in Texas, and they have so much premium income, somebody would buy them. They would never just go under. Somebody would buy them and replace them very quickly. Everybody is always trying to buy a life insurance company, but there's so much money involved, very few people can buy a life insurance company.
Yeah, yeah. And there's too much money to be made. So if people are thinking about this, if they're running some numbers in their head, you know, they're thinking, you know, maybe it is about time I start, you know, getting ready to go ahead and retire. Maybe I think about paying down bills. Maybe I pay off the credit cards, you know, pay off the house, pay off the truck, whatever the case may be. Start eliminating that debt. And then they can come and see you, and you can sit down and you can map all this out and get people on the right strategy and the right trajectory to get where they need when they need to be there. So I assume you have some availability to talk to some people this coming week, yes?
That's right. Tuesday on.
Okay.
From Tuesday on, we will be available.
Perfect.
I'll be in the Dallas office on Monday, but then after that, I will be available.
Sounds great. So, Faye, one last time, what is the phone number people need to call to come and make an appointment?
It's 877-588-3330.